This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I am Chuan Teck. Death and philanthropy don't often go hand in hand, but they collide in the work that both my guests do today. Tham Soo Ming is the General Manager of Hospice Malaysia, a Klang Valley-based nonprofit which provides palliative care to patients suffering from life-limiting illnesses. And Lawrence Lian is Chairman of the Lian Foundation, where one of its central focus is to introduce radical philanthropy to the way we die. Well, that's not exactly what it says on the website, but I'm paraphrasing. Lawrence, Soo Ming, welcome to the show. I was a little bit tongue-in-cheek there. Soo Ming, perhaps I'll start with you. One of the biggest misconceptions about palliative care is that it's for patients who have exhausted all their treatment options and had given up. Tell us what palliative care is.
Good afternoon. Palliative care is basically a treatment and a pathway of care for patients with life-limiting illnesses who, while they are still seeking curative treatment, may be suffering from a host of symptoms and emotional imbalance in well-being. And basically where palliative care comes in is that we come in to help manage these symptoms and the general well-being of the patient, and not forgetting that when a patient is suffering from such an illness, the people around the patient is also affected. And palliative care basically recognizes that we need to also acknowledge that the care of the caregivers and the people around the patient needs to be addressed.
If it's so important, why is it so given so little attention?
I think this is where modern science has advanced to the point where most people who are or are diagnosed or have been diagnosed with a life-limiting illness will tend to, the first thing that they think about is, how can I seek help? Where can I seek help and what do I do? And the first thing they're looking at is quite often curative, looking to reverse the disease, looking to live longer, without necessarily thinking about what am I living longer for and what kind of quality of life will I have if I do live longer. So in many ways, modern science has improved the way we live, but at the same time, questions need to be asked as to, is it helping us to live better, longer, with better quality of life?
Lawrence, what about you? Why is the Lian Foundation choosing to work in this sector?
About 12, 13 years ago, the Lian Foundation wanted to expand our scope of focus. We were just in education back then, and we asked ourselves, if we expand to an area, it must be an area where there's a huge gap and a crying need. And we identified elder care first as that area, because Singapore is a fast-aging population. Then soon after that, we focus even further on death, end-of-life care, palliative care, because in the neglected area of elder care in Singapore, end-of-life care is even more neglected than elder care on the whole. And we are motivated by many people dying with unnecessary pain, because pain is, in most cases, completely avoidable, easy to treat. And it's not just physical pain. You know, I think a lot of people think palliative care is about the physical. Yes, it includes the physical. It's also the social, psychological pain, the spiritual pain, the distress, the lack of incorporation of the hopes, the expectations, meaning for the person that all these interventions are being put on. We wanted to change that in Singapore and also a little bit around the world, around the region.
I alluded in the introduction your philosophy, which is radical philanthropy, and the Lian Foundation is very much a proponent of that. Yeah. What does radical philanthropy mean, and how does it add value to palliative care?
The first thing is, what is the role of philanthropy in society? when we asked ourselves that question, we felt that one of the best roles that we can play is to be innovative, to go use, you know, the capital, which is actually small compared to the resources that, say, the government has, in ways that has got high leverage. You know, high leverage as in, you know, deal with things that have not been done before. You know, so we focus on being innovative. We focus on tackling the root causes of problem, highlighting things that governments and society have ignored. That's about being radical. So it's not just about innovation, but going to tackle these critical gaps. And death, obviously, is one big taboo topic, right, in almost all cultures in the world. And in Singapore, obviously, among Chinese people, it's the taboo topic. Now, let's tackle it head on. And we felt that, you know, if we focus in this area when nobody else is doing, we can at least bring some attention to it and make significant changes.
Could you give me perhaps one example of how innovation has been applied?
So for us, for example, we invested a lot in advocacy, you know, in public education. In the early days, we even took out like full-page ads to get people talking about death. You know, one ad would say, "Hi, I've lung cancer. You know, can we have a conversation?" Another would say, "You know, death. You know, a user-friendly guide." We had video blogs. We produced a movie, 81-minute full-length Life Before Death documentary that was shown all around the world, looking at palliative care, you know, the challenges, the issues, and what can be done. Some of it is fun. It's not just all sad and serious. We had a Happy Coffins project, which is to get people to celebrate their lives by incorporating their lives in the design of a customized coffin that they would rest in. All this is to just get people talking about death and to confront it head on and not to avoid it, because if you avoid it, it comes with unnecessary pain, unnecessary distress for the family. You know, part of why people don't want to get into hospices and palliative care, they feel that they're giving up, or they're giving up on the family members. And all that is quite often linked to a lot of baggage that they have among family members that they have not let go of, they have not sorted out. But if you focus on these things towards the end of life, you know, people will start realizing that letting go is very much part letting go, forgiving, is very much part of the equation when it comes to end of life care and palliative care.
So, a lot of the baggage that Lawrence mentioned is in Malaysia as well. The taboo, the aging society. One estimate projects that we will become an aging society by 2030. As soon as that, what is the biggest challenge for you in the running of Hospice Malaysia?
I think certainly public awareness as to that comes from two sides of the coin. One is in terms of public awareness when people who are in need are not aware that this service is available. And like Lawrence had mentioned with the community in Singapore, it's not dissimilar in Malaysia, and I'm sure across the world, the subject of death and diagnosed with a life-limiting illness, particularly cancer, is still a taboo subject. So people don't talk about it as much. People are not seeking help as early as perhaps they should. And bottom line is, for those who have heard about hospice, they associate it with giving up. So that's one side of the coin. The people who need it may not be asking for it. And then the other side of it is donor funding. People whom we are reaching out to fund the organization that we run, which is basically a charitable organization relying almost entirely on public donations. And quite often what our potential donors, the people that we go see to seek some financial support on, will say, look, I've got many hungry mouths out there. I've got a lot of young children uneducated. Why would I be looking to fund end of life?
Right.
That's a huge challenge.
It's also a chicken and egg situation, isn't it? Because of the low awareness, people are not seeking care. And hence, there is no urgency on the supply side for more medical professionals to be trained, for more doctors to specialize in palliative care. So how do you begin to do that then? And also the allocation of resources issue where, you know, there's children, you want to feed the hungry mouth, you want to support the education instead of making the end of life process as comfortable as possible in terms of an emerging economy like Malaysia, who is trying to develop its economy. How do you talk to, you know, policymakers, for example, or convince businesses that this is the best way of to direct their CSR resources towards?
It's a good question. I think one of the things that we need to start to have people focus on is we come into this world and we have life. And unfortunately, there is a finite time to it. And death is a certainty. How you die is equally as important. I will admit that until the public see how we care for people who are in their last stages of their lives, it is very difficult for them to say, to imagine how palliative care can help. And like Lawrence had indicated, pain is a huge part of what our patients suffer from. It's a substantial part of it. And that's very easily controlled if the patient and the family allow us to manage that. And once that physical pain is managed, the many other aspects of the person's life that can then potentially fall into place. So again, to answer your question, and I'm not sure whether I've got there, our largest advocates are the people who have been touched by the work we do. And perhaps that's the way to go, is to leverage on our advocates.
My guest today is Tham Soo Ming, General Manager of Hospice Malaysia, and Lawrence Lien, Chairman of the Lien Foundation. We're talking about philanthropy and palliative care in Malaysia as well as Asia. Up next, I'll ask both of them what the role of philanthropy is, quality of death index, and how we can raise public awareness. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antik. If you've just joined us today, we have two guests, Tham Soo Ming, General Manager of Hospice Malaysia, as well as Lawrence Lien, Chairman of the Lien Foundation. So, Lawrence, one of the interesting thing that I find your foundation is doing is that you collaborated with the Economist Intelligence Unit to develop this index called the Quality of Death Index. Why do you think there was a need to have such an index?
Well, first, in Singapore, the Ministry of Health loves it, being on top of indices. So we know that that's
the best one way to get to them.
Way to get their attention. Yeah. Well, we didn't fix the results. When we did the 2010 Quality of Death Index with the Economist Intelligence Unit, Singapore came up 18 out of 40 countries to the Ministry of Health. That was not good enough. That was embarrassing. And it started conversations and dialogue within government and with the community, and actually led to a more total effort, you know, by all the parties involved to do better. So as a result of that, the Lien Center for Palliative Care, which was also started by the foundation, was commissioned by the Ministry of Health to develop the national blueprint for palliative care, the national strategy for palliative care for Singapore. And for us, it's money well spent, because it's not just for Singapore, it's for for all the other countries involved in the survey to begin conversations, you know, to get the attention of governments, of ordinary people, to the public, to support greater efforts and to demystify this this topic.
So a lot of the country that did very well are, as expected, the richer countries. And the UK has the best model in the world. What are they doing right and what can we learn from them?
They're very early in setting up hospices and palliative care, specialisation. And we certainly can learn from them in terms of the integration of healthcare services to support palliative care, the education of palliative care professionals as well as all doctors and nurses. But I have to say that, you know, every country still has a lot to do. It doesn't mean that you're top of the ranking. You know, Singapore is now 12th in the latest index, 2015. 12 out of 80 looks good, but there's still so much work. I mean, it's still, you know, whether it's identification or poor identification of people who need it, to, you know, convincing people to get palliative care treatment, to training the doctors, the nurses, the medical professionals, there's still a massive amount of work.
Assuming Malaysia's ranked 38th, which is not the best, but it's not the worst as well, have you seen a change of direction or maybe a signal of intent to improve this sector from the Malaysian government?
I think the intent is there. The Malaysian government in 2005 had recognised that palliative care needed to be incorporated into the national healthcare policy. They set up a blueprint, appointed a national advisor, and basically established a framework within which healthcare professionals can undergo a subspecialty training to become palliative care specialists. In the 10 years that we've gone through with this, according to the Ministry of Health, we have trained 8 palliative care specialists. They have also identified that approximately 30,000 people are diagnosed with serious chronic illnesses each year. And to support the needs of these patients, there is a need to train up to 60 palliative care physicians. We're a long way away. Another area that may give us an indication as to how well we have got in terms of the policy and making it available, making palliative care available to the public, is the use of opioids. We talked about pain management, and the use of opioids is clearly one major area. It's a rough gauge, but nevertheless a good indication to us. The global average of the use of opioids is over 6 milligrams per capita. Malaysia's measurement is at just under 1.5 milligrams per capita. So if that's an indication as to how accessible palliative care is to the general public, perhaps, you know, one can look at that.
Is it expensive to access palliative care?
Not at all. If you look at what we do in palliative care, clearly a lot of it is pain management, morphine and its related opioids are not expensive drugs. Accessibility in terms of control of the drug, unlike perhaps some other developing and underdeveloped countries, it's readily available. It is the knowledge of how to use it that is the challenge. And as we talk to and interview some doctors, some medical professionals not trained in palliative care, they will admit to us that palliative care is not a well-known specialty, even amongst the medical professionals.
Lawrence, we know that government might be slow to react, and in an interview earlier or a few months ago, you said that philanthropists must do what governments are less good at doing. What is it that philanthropy can do better?
Philanthropy can be used as a resource to complement what governments do not do so well. And that's governments throughout the world. I'm not targeting any particular government. Even in Singapore, I like to think that Singapore government is pretty effective, pretty efficient, and progressive. It's still a bureaucracy. It's not good at taking risks, not good at addressing needs. It's not so responsive. Philanthropists can fill this gap by bringing attention to a critical issue, by experimenting with new models. And this is what we've tried to do at Lian Foundation. We've had as many failures as we have had successes, I can tell you. But the successes go on to inform the field, it spreads. You know, sometimes the government takes over, and that gives us a great joy in piloting something which gets the attention of the government, and government has got the resources to spread it across the entire system, the entire country. We hope that philanthropists, you know, many who are business people and entrepreneurs, would take their risk-taking and entrepreneurial mindset in business to philanthropy. Quite often, there's like it's like two different persons. You know, when it comes to philanthropy, they they become so conservative. You know, why? You know, why does it not reflect your skill set, your personality, and what you're good at?
What can philanthropy learn from businesses?
Well, philanthropists, many come from business background. And in business, we know that, you know, you're always looking for opportunities, you know, you invest in research and development. I hope to see philanthropists do more of that to create new things. Of course, there's also the whole trend of bringing the best practice and governance to the nonprofit world. I think it's not just one way, right? Businesses, nonprofits, you know, foundations can learn from the strategic management, governance of big businesses, but businesses can also learn from nonprofits in terms of addressing and being more sensitive to the social needs in the society and trying to help address them. And those social needs might even be addressable with new business models, not just with philanthropic models. But if these business people are not applying their minds to these social issues, then you won't get those innovations either.
So I'm assuming that because you're here, Hospice Malaysia and the Lian Foundation are hoping to collaborate either formally or informally. You disperse $9 million US dollars annually. How do you choose which organization to support?
Well, we tend to see nonprofit organizations as partners, co-creators, rather than as donees or, you know, grant recipients. We want the power relationship to be at the same level. It's not us with all the money telling you what to do, because we are not experts. The experts are on the ground. So that's what we do. I mean, we find the best in the nonprofit sector, the leaders, the progressive people who are willing to try new things. We work with them. We even go on study trips with them. It's quite unusual, you know, foundations and nonprofits, we go together to see the best in the world, come, go back to Singapore and brainstorm. Oh, you know, we saw this model, can it apply here? How do we adapt that? And together we form new, we start up new ideas and new projects and new programs.
Suming, how difficult is it to raise funds?
I will say with an organization that is growing and also where we view ourselves as a market leader, there's a lot clearly to be done. Fundraising clearly is a huge aspect given the operating expenses that we're working on, which is just over 3.5 million ringgit a year. possibly just under 50% of my time is therefore focused on looking at how we can sustain ourselves. But with that, it's not just engaging with donors, as Lawrence has indicated, to raise funds. I think it goes, we've gone beyond that. We've gone to the stage where we are now looking to engage our donors, our larger, I guess, corporate donors, a lot more in depth, have them understand why we're doing it, and have them hold our hand, and not just giving us money, but helping us strategize on how we can engage the policymakers a little better, work with our international partners in a more meaningful way, and at the end of the day, is to benefit the greater Malaysia.
Lawrence, perhaps I'll give you the last word. You've said that you want to develop an Asian style of philanthropy that the West can emulate. What would this model look like?
Well, just this year, I started a new platform called the Asia Philanthropy Circle. And with this platform, I hope to bring together philanthropists from all around the region, all around Asia, to learn, exchange, coordinate, collaborate, work together. Social problems are getting increasingly complex and requires the attention of philanthropists, not as single people intervening in the system. To have greater impact, we need people, philanthropists, to work together, to learn across borders, because it doesn't matter whether, for example, you're doing palliative care, you know, in Singapore, Malaysia, India, China, even though the context is very different, there are a lot of common approaches, you know, common strategies that we can learn from one another. We want to disseminate those best practices. We want philanthropists to work together to do things that they themselves singly would not be able to do. So this is the vision, and thereby also create something that is truly Asian, not just a copy-paste from the West.
Well, best of luck to you. Thank you, Soo Ming and Lawrence. My guest today is Tam Soo Ming, General Manager of Hospice Malaysia, and Lawrence Lien, Chairman of the Lien Foundation. You've been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.